Well, I mean, I think that we are all looking for a match for how to live, right? And when you think about it, that's totally hilarious because by definition, no one has ever lived the life we're living, right? No one has ever lived my life with my experiences, with my pain, with my loss, with my skills, with my effort. Every single life is an unrepeatable, an unprecedented experiment, which makes it hilarious. We're always asking other people how we should live. It's literally like we're asking other people for directions to places they've never been.
That was best-selling author Glennon Doyle, arguably one of the most successful memoir writers of all time, also an activist and an inspiration for women everywhere. Hello, I'm Celeste Headlee. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. This podcast brings you conversations with some of the most brilliant minds out there, and they have invaluable advice for you, inspiration that will help you navigate life in both your career and at home. Today's episode features two remarkable women to talk about the important issues we face today around emotional, spiritual, and physical health. Glennon Doyle will help you find your truest self and explore the joy and peace we discover when we stop trying to reach perfection and constantly trying to meet others' expectations. Together, we'll learn how to take a leap of faith towards bravery and begin trusting the voice deep within ourselves. Glennon is joined by Laisha Ward, our special guest podcast host. Laisha is the Executive Vice President and Chief External Engagement Officer for Target, and Target is the national lifestyle sponsor for the Conferences for Women. I'm so excited to sit back and listen along with all of you. So let's get started.
Glennon, thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you about your amazing life and journey.
Oh, thank you, Laisha. I've been looking forward to this all day.
Yeah, me too. So this episode airs during Mental Health Awareness Month, a topic that is near and dear to your heart and such an integral part of your journey. And what I love is that you speak openly and honestly about your personal struggles, which has helped so many others who are facing their own struggles. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you for saying that. It's one of my favorite things to talk about is mental health.
And it's such an important topic that for so many people, they're afraid to talk about. So I really appreciate the visibility and awareness that you're bringing to something that is so life-affirming and important.
Thank you. I mean, during COVID times, it suddenly feels like something that was just for a few of us, right? Which when you think about it, is so silly because we have an understanding as a culture that physical health is for everyone, right? You don't say physical health is just for sick people. It's something we tend to all the time. We know we have to eat a certain way. We know we have to exercise. We know we have to do things to address our physical health. Everybody, just because we're human. And I think we're just starting to understand that that is the exact same thing about mental health, right? It's not just for people who have a diagnosis. It's just like physical health. It's something that we all have to tend to every single day just because we're human.
That's absolutely right. As you just said, you know, over the course of the last year, people have endured extraordinary challenges. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of focus on physical health. And yet we know that a focus on overall well-being should be a priority, including our mental health. So what would you say to women trying to make emotional well-being a priority for themselves and for their families?
Oh, isn't that a beautiful question? I used to have this little snow globe when I was a kid. My godmother gave it to me and I loved this little snow globe, but I hated it too. I was so scared of it. It was this, you could shake it up and it was so pretty when it was shaken up because it had all this like glitter and snow. But then when the snow settled, there was this dragon at the center of it. And it was like this red fiery dragon. And I used to think it was so scary when I was little. So I would keep it shaken up all the time. I'd just walk into my bedroom and like shake it up real quick. So I didn't have to see the dragon. And I think of myself and really all human beings as just like that, right? We are like snow globes and we keep ourselves shaken up constantly with all the things we use. It's different for everybody, same for everybody. Food, booze, busyness, overwork, apathy, snark, scrolling, shopping, online shopping, like whatever it is, redecorating, like whatever it is. to keep ourselves busy, keep ourselves shaken up, because we don't want to be still, because when we're still, the dragon pops up inside of us, right? And the reason why I'm bringing this up in response to your question about emotional health is that I have a hunch that that dragon, which is just the truth, right? The dragon is just the truth about our life or our relationship or our parenting or our work life or our nation, whatever it is. It's just the truth of things that has to be dealt with next, right? And to me, the people who live emotionally strongly and emotionally healthy are the people who allow that dragon to arise and look right at it, right? And so I have seen that happening more and more lately. And I think it's because COVID has been a collective forced settling of the snow globe, right? So many things have been taken from us.
What a beautiful way for you to bring that to life. I mean, such a powerful visual image of the world around us being shaken up, mm-hmm. and a need for us all to be still and to become anew, mm-hmm. in a world that is so chaotic is like blowing my mind. Amazing. Oh. Amazing. Oh,
it feels right and it feels scary. You know, I think that the scariest thing in the world is to get still enough to let the truth rise, because the truth is always hard. It's that little thing that nags at us. It's like, okay, maybe the 5 glasses of wine isn't my best life. Okay, maybe that phone call that I'm avoiding is like the one I need to make. Maybe that relationship is the one I need to leave. Maybe that desire is the one I need to meet. It's the scariest thing. And also, it's so imperative to growth. Right? The dragon is what we have to slay one at a time so that we can get to the next version of ourselves.
And sometimes in that stillness, it allows us to quiet our mind and to prioritize and mm-hmm. think about what is best for us, and then to create a path forward. And so I'd love to build on this discussion and talk about resiliency. Because resiliency is key to navigating these difficult times. And it certainly played an incredibly important role in your life mm-hmm. as you navigated through struggle. So what advice do you have for our listeners today who are feeling exhausted and just worn out?
Yeah. Well, first of all, just join the exhausted club. There's nothing wrong with you if you are feeling tired, if you are feeling depressed, if you are feeling overwhelmed. I mean, this year, just the unbelievable burden it has placed upon especially women.
Not only women, but certainly women of color, has been enormous, Glennon. And I've been saying, it's okay to not be okay.
Yes. Actually, I think it's crucial to not be okay. Because what we don't want is what the 12 people in power do want, which is for things to go back to normal, right? And the way things will go back to normal, which means the rest of us are screwed and those 12 people stay in power, right? Is if we keep putting on that mask of, it's okay, we're okay, we're fine. We are not okay. We are carrying way more than half the sky, right? Our institutions are broken. They were not meant to serve us, especially women of color, right? They were made so that our lives would be untenable. And so I don't think that there's any valor or honor in saying that we're okay anymore. That needs to go. That's not the bravest thing. I think the bravest thing is digging our feet in. We are not okay. And we will not go back to normal. And what COVID has been is this revelation where even people who don't want to have had to look at our institutions and admit that they're broken, right? And so what comes after revelation is, it's possible for there to be revolution after that, but only if we refuse to go back into that, to go into that gently.
Yeah, I agree. I believe we have to create a new normal, one that is more just and equitable for everyone, because they're not broken. They're actually performing in the way that they were designed to.
They're working perfectly.
Right? We want to create a new normal, one that is more equitable and just for everyone. And it's really powerful for us to put that out into the world and not expect things to go back to the way that they were, because that wasn't working.
That was not working. I think that the snow globe metaphor works for that too. I mean, when you think about you know, we think about when the racial reckoning began during this time, which was just beginning. But when you think back to when that started during COVID, okay, when the country looked at the murder of George Floyd, what was different about that? Nothing. That's been happening every single freaking day for so long, forever, right? And it forced us as a nation to look at the red dragon at the center of our nation, which has always been systematic racism. And we couldn't look away, right? We didn't have the snowball. We couldn't just carry on. We couldn't just leave the house. We couldn't pretend that didn't happen like we've been doing for so long, right? So while it's been incredibly chaotic, I think a lot of people will call it chaotic, I think it's the good kind of chaos. I think it's the chaos that comes with the destruction of what needed to be destroyed, right? We just have to not allow ourselves to be gaslit again. We cannot allow them to rebuild without us in mind.
Amen to that, sister. And to leverage this time of exhaustion to heal on the one hand and gain energy that allows us to move forward and to be a part of the change that is so critically necessary, which is inspiring as well.
Yeah, doesn't it feel like sometimes the most radical thing we can do is just like rest?
Yes, yes. Rest is so critically important to our mental and physical health and well-being. And it's restorative. It really does give us the energy and the power to unlock all of the things that we can and want to do, to know that we are worthy of all the spaces that we're entering.
Absolutely.
That we as women will be the ones that will lead the way.
Yes. And we get to be fully human while we do it. Yeah. Right? People ask me sometimes, because of my work with Together Rising, how do you not quit? Like with all the negativity, with all the need, like how do you not quit? And I always say, Laisha, I quit every day. Quitting is my favorite. Like quitting is my spiritual practice. I wake up in the morning, Laisha, and I have way too much coffee and I care the most amount about the world. Okay. In the morning, there's no one who cares more than me. There's no one with greater hope, with greater optimism. I've got my easels. I've got my whiteboard. I've got my ways. We're going to take down the patriarchy. Slowly I run out of care. Okay. Around 5 or 5:30, I don't care at all. I care about no one. Okay. I care. I stop. I quit. It's me and the couch and Netflix and what, and the carbs and the food. It's not like a diversion from my purpose. It's what you just said. It's a crucial part of continuing to show up, is that commitment to quitting each day.
Yeah. It's self-care, right? It's self-care isn't selfish. It's essential. And your quitting every day gives you a chance to take care of yourself, which is really brave. You look really brave and a great lesson to share.
Yes. And thank you for calling it self-care, because I feel like as women, we are tricked into believing that self-care can only be like manicures and like more things we have to do on our list. Like, when did we get tricked into that?
It's not true, right? Such great perspective. Okay. So that leads me to ask about living with greater intention, which you talk about extensively in your book. Can you say more about what it means to live with intention and what advice you have for turning that intention into action?
Well, first of all, that's what you made me think of when you said, when we get still, we're able to think, feel, make a plan. We live in a world where we are so addicted to exteriority, meaning we wake up in the morning and it's like voices, 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 podcasts, TV shows, experts, therapists, computer. Like we're constantly, constantly being yelled at, which is actually quite dangerous, because when you think about most of the messages we get are people trying to convince us of something, to sell us something. Like you cannot, you must find time to reconnect with your inner voice. You will always just be following other people's maps for you, right? Living with intention. I mean, I'll never forget, I almost, Laisha, did not make the most important decision of my life. I almost did not leave my broken marriage because I was so afraid of being a bad mom, because I was so afraid of hurting my child, right? And then one day I was looking at her and I thought, oh, I'm staying in this marriage for her, but would I want this marriage for her?
Wow.
And if I didn't want this marriage for her, then why am I modeling bad love and calling that good mothering? Okay?
That's deep and reflective.
And it's reflective. It's because I gave myself time to consider what I decide is a good mother. Because if I don't stop and be intentional about making those decisions, I will, by osmosis, take on the cultural idea of what makes a good mother. And the culture will always tell women in every single aspect of their life that the way you be a good anything is that you accommodate and slowly disappear.
Wow.
Right? I had to decide that, no. In my situation, a good mother is a model, not a martyr. Right? But that takes intentionality.
I love that. A model, not a martyr. Incredible. You once said in an interview, one of the most subversive, freeing questions a woman can ask herself is, what do I want? You know, yet the way that we're hardwired, it's really hard to flip that script and start putting our needs first without feeling guilty or feeling selfish. What helps? Like, what allowed you to make the most difficult decision of your life that, as you said, you almost didn't make?
I have a necklace I don't have on right now that just says more. Because I feel like some of the most subversive thing a woman can say or want is, I want what I want and I want more of it. And I don't believe it's bad. I mean, you know, Laisha, one of my jobs is to talk to women. I've been talking and listening to women for 15 years. What women want is good.
Yeah.
Right? Women want some rest. They want good food. They want good sex. They want safety and freedom for their children and for other people's children. What they want is good, right? It's just that if women actually went for what they want, unjust governments would topple. Institutions would be turned over. Family relationships would be changed. It would change all of status quo, right? So it makes sense that women are constantly shamed out of their desire.
In your latest book, Untamed, you have literally changed the lives of so many women at an incredibly pivotal time in the world. And a big theme in the book is this idea that women need to tune into our inner voice, because so often we don't act on our inner voice because we don't trust ourselves. We are too busy trying to please others, or we're just conditioned, as you've been saying, Glennon, to not trust ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think it's important to listen to our inner voice and act on it, especially right now?
Well, I mean, I think that we are all looking for a map for how to live, right? And when you think about it, that's totally hilarious, because by definition, no one has ever lived the life we're living, right? No one has ever lived my life with my experiences, with my pain, with my loss, with my skills, with my effort. Every single life is an unrepeatable, an unprecedented experiment, which makes it hilarious. We're always asking other people how we should live. It's literally like we're asking other people for directions to places they've never been.
They've never been.
I mean, Laisha, I still do it. I will get confused about life and I will take a freaking BuzzFeed quiz. I mean, I will ask, which was clearly made by some 18-year-old who lives in the basement of his mother. Like,
right.
What? Okay, I will just tell you this quick story. One day I had my son, I have a boy and two girls until they tell me otherwise. My son was having friends over and I peeked my head into the little room and I said, hey, is anybody hungry? And something amazing happened, which is that every single boy in the room, without taking his eyes off the TV, said, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, they just heard a question. They looked inside themselves, they found an answer, they said it. Nailed this Q&A, Laisha, right? Okay. The girls did something completely different. I will never forget it as long as I live. First of all, every single girl in the room was silent. Then every single one of them took their eyes off the TV and started looking at each other's faces.
Yeah.
Laisha.
Yeah.
At each other's faces to find out if they in fact were hungry inside their own body. Okay. Right after that, somehow they silently appoint a spokesgirl, because this small braided child in the corner turns towards me and says, no, thank you. We're fine.
So what's up with that? Like, why do you think that happened, Glennon? Like, what was hardwired in those young people that they acted so differently?
Okay, so here's my hope. My hope is that nothing is hardwired in them. Okay, if this is like a technological metaphor, They were born blank slates, but they were programmed. Okay. They were programmed in gendered ways. Okay. I'm a former third grade teacher. I know how children are programmed. Okay. So boys are programmed to believe that in every moment of uncertainty, they should look and find inside themselves, find their desire, and speak it. Little girls are programmed that in every moment of uncertainty, they should look outside of themselves for consensus, for permission, right? So what I think that happens is that women, little girls, we forget how to know when we learn how to please.
Right. So we're not able to tap into our inner voice, to believe in our inner voice, let alone to act on it.
That's what I believe. I believe that if you took a bunch of boys and girls and you switched their conditioning, I believe that the little boys would be looking outward and the little girls would be inward. I don't believe that there's a thing, that there's a single human characteristic that's gendered. I think that the permission to express certain characteristics is gendered, right? And that our programming is gendered. So if that is the case, which I think most social scientists believe is true, if we can be programmed, then what you said is exactly right. We can also be deprogrammed, and that is extremely hopeful.
You're listening to a conversation with Glennon Doyle, the best-selling author of Untamed. If you're listening to this before May 6th, there's still time for you to register for the online National Workplace Summit. It's an event for both men and women, really for anyone who finds themselves managing a team this year and would benefit from some expert guidance and peer support. You can find tickets and lots more information at conferencesforwomen.org. And a little bit of news. The Texas Conference for Women just announced their first keynote speaker for this year's virtual conference on October 7th. The breathtakingly inspirational Malala Yousafzai. Registration opens for the Texas Conference for Women on Wednesday, May 12th. So save that date and be sure to take advantage of that early bird ticket pricing. We'll announce speakers and registration dates for the Pennsylvania and Massachusetts Conferences for Women soon. So stay tuned. You'll find more information about all of these events, plus show notes and transcripts for Women Amplified episodes at conferencesforwomen.org. Now let's get back to the conversation.
I want to dig into this a little deeper with you. Should we always listen to our inner voice? I mean, right? It's been tough out there, girl, right? People are stuck inside, quarantining, lonely. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, this type of isolation has huge impacts. And it can be easy to start spinning in negativity. So how do you actually know when to listen and when you should silence it?
Yeah, that's so good. Well, I spend most of the day silencing voices in my head. I have major anxiety. So most of my day, Leisha, is like, shut up. Like, I am harassed constantly by anxiety. If I'm hearing a voice, you know how most people's inner voice are always giving them fear messages, like, I'm not good enough, they're not good enough. That if the message comes to me in words, I know that's not my knowing. That's fear. That's anxiety, right? I'm not talking about the voices that harass us all day. I'm talking about that deep, you know, when you get really still and you're pretending to not know what to do.
Yeah.
And you feel this like gravity type of thing.
It's pulling on you.
That knows what to do. Yeah. And you usually just don't want to do the thing that you know to do because it's scary or hard.
Because it's scary and hard and you are afraid to take that first step. Absolutely.
And that's when the crazy voices come back. Usually, the voices in my head are the voices that I'm activating to try to convince my knowing that I don't have to do the thing it's told me to do. It's two separate programs.
Wow.
But it gets very tricky, Leisha, because I'm also not talking about our conditioning. So, for example, when we think about all of the phone calls that are being made to the police by white women, okay?
All the Karens,
right? If you ask those women why they called the police, they will say, well, because I was scared. They will tell you that it's their knowing, that it's just their intuition. Like, what are they supposed to do? They were scared. The question is, your fear is racist. Like, it's deeper than you. You're not asking yourself, why are you afraid of that man? But you wouldn't be afraid of that man doing the exact same thing. Why are you triggered? So what we don't want is a situation where everyone's going around trusting what they're calling their intuition and what is really their conditioned self, right? That is wholly, in this culture, full of racism and misogyny. It's a tricky question that is very layered and needs to be discussed wholly, or otherwise people going around trusting what they're calling their intuition will be unleashing terrible decisions.
And full of lots of unconscious bias or things that misrepresent the real truth.
Absolutely.
That needs to be unpacked. Really, really powerful. Okay, I want to switch gears just a bit. In your book, you say that the only thing that was ever wrong with me was my belief that there was something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Ooh, girl, so much to unpack in that. And I just think it's really, really powerful. It speaks to your journey, Glennon, and it speaks to the power of self-acceptance, right? I think we're always striving to be better. As you said earlier, striving for more. So how do we stop aiming for perfection? So much about what other people want or think and truly feel good about who and where we are.
I love it. I love it. I mean, this idea of perfect, it's so funny when you stop, when you let the snow settle, when you really think about this version of perfect we have. Okay, so whose idea of perfect are we talking about? Somebody had to create this idea. So when I think of like, okay, so let me unearth the idea of what a perfect white woman is. What I've been conditioned to believe a perfect white woman is. Okay, so she's pretty, she's thin, she's quiet, she's accommodating, she never questions power, she accepts all proximity to power and all the benefits that that gives her, right? But she never demands any real power. She never speaks up for anyone else. She never rocks the boat. She keeps clearly the definition of the perfect white woman was created by a white man, right? And every marginalized group, when you're looking at, be real careful what you're aiming for, what your version of perfect that you're striving for is, because it probably doesn't serve you. It probably serves somebody else. The idea of perfect is just a teeny little cage that we find ourselves striving for and benefits power over and over again, right? So again, just like I had to redefine what makes a good mom and who is that serving? When we say, I'm trying to be perfect, what do we mean? Do we mean we're trying to get 16 hours worth of work done in 8 hours?
Right.
Does that mean we're supposed to be taking a bunch of crap from somebody but still smiling? Does it mean we're supposed to be totally freaking exhausted, finding the right concealer to cover up our exhaustion every day? And like, blah, blah, blah. Like, wait, who is all of that soothing? Maybe it would be way more perfect to actually say how we're feeling. Maybe it would be way more perfect to not get the work done and to say, this is too much freaking work, right? Maybe perfect means something completely different than what we've been conditioned to mean it does. And in terms of what I believe was wrong about myself, I became bulimic. When I was 10 years old, I sank right into addiction and didn't get out till I was 26. And what I was, and I spent my whole life thinking I was crazy. I'm crazy. My whole life was hospitals and medication. And really what I was an extremely sensitive kid who didn't have the tools she needs to deal with her sensitivity, right? What I know now is the sensitivity that led me to addiction is the exact same sensitivity that makes me a really good artist. I needed everything that I thought was a weakness turned out to be exactly what was purposefully placed in me to get my particular work done on this earth. And I believe that is true for everyone when we reject whatever the culture told us we have to be and we actually consider who we are and what gifts we have.
That is powerful. It's about identifying and claiming your superpower and in many ways being perfectly imperfect.
Yes.
That is perfection, perfectly imperfect and being comfortable in that. I've been moved by you and your ability to be unapologetically you in all facets of your life. And I think people would find it intriguing that you describe yourself as an introvert. And you say, I love humanity, but actual human beings are tricky for me. I love people, but not in person. for example, I would die for you, but like not meet you for coffee. I'm fascinated by that. So how do you maintain such a strong public persona while still taking care of and being true to yourself?
Yeah, I mean, none of this is easy for me. I was always the kid, books, I'm a writer because books are how I sort of lived. I would much rather learn about a person from a book than from the person. Like if I'm wanting to get to know somebody, I would be like, I like you so much. Can you give me your top five favorite books? Because then I'll read them and I'll know you so well. Whereas the other person will be like, why don't we just go to coffee?
You're so warm. You're so engaging. Like we've just met and I feel like I've known you forever. And I definitely know that we'll continue to stay in touch. I just feel that. And yet I can also relate to what you're expressing around being more of an introvert because I am as well, which people wouldn't believe about me either. And so it's just very freeing to hear you talk about this and the sort of dimensions and nuance of your personality and life.
Yeah. I mean, I became a writer so that I could be connected with humanity, but in my pajamas, in my closet. Like,
I love that.
Leisha, writing about the importance of community while I'm alone in my closet. But it's also a bit of a shadow self, I will say, that I, while I respect my inner introvert, I also know that it's not my best self when I don't get pre-COVID, like in rooms with human beings. Like I need that very much, even though it's not my, it's just not my most comfortable place. I don't know. I have some, I guess what you would call social anxiety. When my doorbell rings, Leisha, it's like we're being attacked by rebel forces. When my, it scares the bejesus out of me. Like, and I shame my poor children. Like our doorbell will ring and they'll be like, oh my God, what? And I'm like, you guys, actually, it's okay. All moms aren't like this. I don't know.
Like you, I really appreciate human connection. And I think relationships are so important. And I often talk about the power of connection currency. And I get energy and am inspired by being around people and their creative ideas and all the amazing things they're trying to do in the world. But I also, quite frankly, sometimes have energy taken away when I'm in those moments. And I have to sort of step back and get recharged so that I can fully engage with the community that I love and am dependent upon. But I just don't interact in the same way, perhaps, as others who are introverts do. And in many ways, people will say I'm a business extrovert, but an internal introvert.
Interesting. Would you consider yourself a highly sensitive person? Do you pick up, like, are you hyper aware? If you're in a room full of people, do you find yourself hyper aware of everybody and how everyone's conglomerating and feeling? And do you do that? Because I think that's part of it.
I do that a lot. I'm very intuitive, definitely thinking about everyone in the room and trying to get a sense of their story, trying to build empathy and find the right way to have an authentic, meaningful connection.
That takes energy, being like that, right? So maybe that's one of the reasons why it would be a little more taxing for us. Like we feel introverted because I don't know if this is the leftover teacher in me, but when I walk into a room, I am constantly worried about everyone. Like, why is that person by themselves in the corner? Why is that man taking all the talking time? That person looks sad. But like, it's an onslaught of responsibility.
Every section is perfectly aligned and playing in the right way at the right time. In harmony.
Yes.
I also think about you when I think about the theme of this conference, because I think you've been living the theme, women leading the way forward. And you do it in a variety of ways, like founding Together Rising, which is an extraordinary, extraordinary organization where you've raised over $28 million for women, families, and children in crisis. Like, wow. How did you even think to create this amazing organization? And what advice would you share with women who are trying to figure out how they can lead the way forward in whatever way they can?
Mm-hmm. So Together Rising started, I think my job began as an artist, which just means as a writer, my job was just to pay close attention. I seriously think of my job as to pay really close attention and report back to people who can't pay that close of attention because they have real jobs. Like, that's what a writer does.
I think you are an amazing person who listens, who then learns, and then co-creates shared stories, which is the gift of a writer.
Thank you. Yes, or that's better. But I really think what happens when you pay close attention, which you know so well, is that you just really do fall in love with people. Like, when you are listening carefully to people's stories, you really can't help it. This whole like disconnection device and all of it, it doesn't work when you're close up. When you get close up, it's just like you want to be connected. So that's how Together Rising started, is that we just wanted to start serving each other and loving each other better in this community. And then what happened after a while, Alicia, is that we would meet in people's needs. We were working our butts off. And every night my sister and I, we ran it together. The question would be, why are all of these freaking people suffering so much? Like, we're reading their stories. We're talking to them. Like, in this country where we were promised, if you do A, B, and C, you can make ends meet. Why are all these people suffering? And then one day I read this quote by Desmond Tutu that said, you can only pull people out of the river for so long until you have to look upriver and find out who's pushing them in.
Okay?
And that is when I stopped being just a philanthropist and started becoming an activist. Because what I realized is, if you are a philanthropist who's not paying close enough attention, you actually become quite codependent with power. Okay? It's a great system. They're pushing them in upriver and you're downriver pulling them out. No problem. We've got it, right? You actually become power's foot soldiers. So what I learned after, wherever there's great suffering, there's also great profit. Right? Where people are suffering, there is always somebody upstream pushing people in. So it is my job as a philanthropist at Together Rising to be pulling people out of the river who have already been pushed in. For example, we work so hard with the LGBTQ teen community because they're number one growing homeless community in our country.
Yep.
Right? We're building shelters, we're getting mentorships, whatever. We will continue to do that. But it is also my job to go upstream and to give living hell to the people who are preaching shame and hatred and bigotry that is then filtering into these families' homes and causing parents to kick their children out of the homes, right? It's a constant and both, because if you don't go upriver, it's never going to stop. It's like that quote that's like, when I fed the poor, they called me a saint. When I asked why people were poor, they called me a communist. Like, I have seen that, Alicia. I've felt that, like the shift in the energy of the world when I stop being like, okay, I've got everybody, and start asking hard questions. And then here's the second part of your question about my advice. I think that women, actually every single marginalized group, is always told that they shouldn't feel their feelings, right? That they should not be angry, that they should not be heartbroken. I think that one of the most important things for a woman to do is to embrace her anger and embrace her heartbreak. So I think that heartbreak is the absolute best clue for any woman to know what she's supposed to do in the world, right?
And say more about that.
Well, I just started noticing early on that people would tell me over and over again, oh, I can't read that. It'll break my heart. I can't go there. It'll break my heart. I can't read that. I can't meet her. It'll break my heart. So interesting. I was like, what is this conditioning? That we actually believe that our purpose down here is to avoid heartbreak by all means, right? That's weird. Actually, heartbreak is not something that should be avoided. It is something that it should be rushed towards. It's like the greatest clue of our lives, right? Because what breaks your heart is different than what breaks your heart than what breaks your heart. When you find the thing that breaks your heart and you go towards that thing, you find your purpose.
Yeah, powerful. Love that.
Right. And then, Alicia, the really cool thing is what women tell me over and over again, their biggest fear is that they'll die without finding their purpose, that they'll die without finding their people. They want purpose. They want connection.
Yeah.
You find out what breaks your heart. You find both. Because when you go towards the people doing that world-changing work, those are your people. There's no bond greater than the bond that happens among people who are doing the same world-changing work together, right? And might I consider, though it sounds ironic for me, that everyone doesn't need to start their own nonprofit, okay?
That's powerful. So I agree with you. There is an abundance of organizations. And quite frankly, there are plenty out there in the world that we can connect to and amplify our impact versus starting from ground zero. I could not agree with you more. And I know our time is drawing near. I could talk to you for hours.
I know. Well, hopefully this will be just the beginning.
But I have just one last question for you. And it is, what's next? And what can we look forward to from you? And please tell us that it involves more cheetah.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I'm going to tell you two things. I'll tell you one fun thing. And that is that Untamed is being turned into a TV show. It's very fun and cool. It's going to be really exciting. I'm working on it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I know. But my second thing is this. I just want, whenever anyone asks a woman, what are you going to do next? I just want the woman to say, I'm going to freaking rest. Okay. Like, you know what's next? I'm going to get a glass of water. Okay. And I'm going to take my dog for a walk. Maybe take a bath. I don't know. I learned in early sobriety, Laysha, what's next is the next right thing. One thing at a time. I'm living my whole life like that. So you ask me what's next. I will tell you after this. I'm going to do one more interview and then I'm going to get in my pajamas, which to tell you the truth, I already have my pajama bottoms on.
My pajama bottoms on too.
And then I'm going to get some carbs and I'm going to watch TV.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving us just a little glimpse into your future. And I will be following you and I'll be cheering for you too.
You too.
This has been a phenomenal conversation. You are an amazing memoir writer, an activist, a philanthropist, and an inspiration for women everywhere. Thank you for being a guest on Women Amplified.
Glennon Doyle is a best-selling author, activist, and an inspiration to people everywhere. Today's special guest podcast host was Laysha Ward, the Executive Vice President and Chief External Engagement Officer for Target, the national lifestyle sponsor of the Conferences for Women. You'll find a transcript of today's conversation, plus a summary of takeaways, and some additional resources that we've compiled for you in the show notes. It's at conferencesforwomen.org/podcast. And if you enjoy this podcast, share it with others. Share the joy. We can all benefit from a little bit of good advice and a little bit of motivation right now. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 50,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California. I'm Celeste Headley, and this is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.